share some work that we've been doing that relates to TDCS targeting and TDCS dose. And I'll explain more about that and the link below, which I'll show again. I'll have quite a few references, but I'll include them at the end, and they're all linked to at that site. So we already heard a great introduction on transcranial direct current stimulation. At its most basic form, transcranial direct current stimulation involves passing very weak current through electrodes placed on the head, and as a result, some of that current will flow through the head. And this chart, which is not even up to date anymore, shows the peer-reviewed publications using transcranial direct current stimulation. It was around since before 2000, but that inflection point you're seeing in 2000 was a seminal paper that was conducted right here in Göttingen that really established modern TDCS by Dr. Nietzsche and Dr. Paulus. And since then, it's been explored for many, many things. Neuropsychiatric disorders, epilepsy, even performance enhancement in healthy adults. And so it seems like a technique that's capable of doing many different things. And the hypothesis is that its ability to do many different things, its specificity, derives from the ability to deliver current to brain regions that are associated with different functions. So the ability to target TDCS current, the ability to deliver current to the parts of the brain that you want, and to not deliver current to the parts of the brain you don't want, should be very important for the specificity and ultimately for the efficacy of the technique. So as a very brief primer, with TDCS, you'll always have at least one anode and one cathode placed on the head. And the anode is connected to the positive terminal of the battery, and the negative is connected to the negative terminal of the battery. And current will come out of the positive terminal, the red in this case, and flow into the head and into the brain. And it will come out, in this case, as illustrated, on the block terminal, so out of the head. And so if you look at where current is entering and exiting the brain, in this example, it's roughly under the electrode. So this is a false color picture, and in this case, blue means no current, and green and hotter colors, red, mean more current. And you can see that the current is somewhat concentrated under the electrodes for this montage. Now you can also say, more specifically, is it flowing in or is it flowing out? And that's shown in the next picture, where red is inward current, and blue in this case is outward current, and green would be no current. And you can see that along the lines of what I just explained, under the anode, current is flowing into the brain, and under the cathode, current is flowing out of the brain. And this notion of directionality, as Dr. Nietzsche just outlined, is considered very important in the dosing of TDCS. So whether current flows in or out, those are not the same thing, and this is considered important. Now all the analysis I'll be showing you today comes from these MRI-derived computational models. And I'm not going to be giving an engineering talk today, so I won't be talking about these methods in detail, but they are available in the references I'll be including. But essentially, these start from MRI-derived models from individuals. And so we generate models that capture the specificity of individual anatomy, and then effectively we simulate TDCS in those models by applying stimulation just like as you would in a person, by putting electrodes on the head. And an important idea to take away is that TDCS dose is what the user controls. So it is the number of electrodes, the current that you're putting on the electrodes, how long you're passing it. And in the case of drugs, it's very well understood that the concentration you give the person, let's say in a pill, let's say a few milligrams, is not what is showing up, let's say, in the hippocampus, right? If you give someone a tablet with 10 milligrams, you don't get 10 milligrams in the hippocampus. There's a transformation that occurs due to the body. Well, the same thing happens in electrical stimulation. The dose is what you control as an operator, but what actually shows up in different parts of the brain depends on the body, and that is the electric field in each region, and that's where the pictures that I'm showing you. So it's not a simple one-to-one mapping. And the models, you don't have to understand the model methods for this talk, but The goal of the models is to relate what's on the outside to what's on the inside, because this is not trivial. And so you control what's on the outside, but you're curious to get something on the inside that you're interested in. So it's relating outside to inside, and so that's what I showed you here. This was a particular montage with an anode on the left and a cathode on the right side of the head, and the model predicted the current pattern that you saw. So high definition TDCS is a small variant of regular TDCS. Regular TDCS conventionally uses larger PAS electrodes. They tend to be a few centimeter by a few centimeters squared, while in high definition, you'll be using smaller electrodes. These are much more like EEG-based electrodes, but they're customized for stimulation. As a result of using smaller electrodes, you can also put more on the head. So in many applications or montages used for high definition TDCS, it's not just two electrodes. It could be five, it could be eight, and in fact, you could be using a whole array. So you can think of high definition TDCS as sort of an inverse EEG. And with regular TDCS, as with high definition TDCS, generally you have a target brain region that you're interested in. And this will be application specific. If you're looking at mood, it might be prefrontal. If you're looking at pain, it might be motor. If you're interested in epilepsy, it might be the epileptic foci. But whatever your target is, there tends to be a region of the brain that you want to stimulate, and that's your efficacy, and that's your specificity. And you'd like to not stimulate the rest of the brain. And so when you are picking your TDCS dose, which in the case of high definition would be the number of electrodes, where you're going to put them on the head, and how much current you're going to be putting into each one, what you're essentially doing is, how do I best pick the number of electrodes and the current at each electrode to get current to that target and not to other brain regions? So I think that the question is pretty straightforward. How to get there turns out to not always be very straightforward. Because when you have, for example, 32 or 64 electrodes on the head, and at each electrode, you can control the amount of current that you're putting in, let's say anywhere between 0 and 2 milliamp, you have many degrees of freedom. Right? You really almost have an infinite amount of degrees of freedom, so you can do a lot. So then it's not simple to think about, well, should I use 10 electrodes? Should I use 13 electrodes? Should I use 5 anodes and 6 cathodes? Should I use 1 milliamp, 2 milliamp, 0.5, you know, and so on. There's many combinations. And so fortunately, these computational models can assist in that decision process. They can show you, for a given electrode montage on the outside, what can I achieve as far as current flow on the inside. The best solution, there is no best, because it depends on what you want to do. You may be interested in one brain region. You may simultaneously want to activate two brain regions. You may be very interested to affect a very small region. You may be interested to affect a deep brain region. You may be very interested at focality, or you may say, you know what, I don't care about focality. I just want to get as much current to that brain region as possible. And then there are other constraints that you may put on, like I don't want to use more than 2 milliamps, because that's, you know, it's conventionally used and so on. So you're working within these parameters, and that's what you want to derive is the best possible solution. So I'll give you one example. Let's say you're interested in targeting one region, and it happens to be a cortical region, motor or sensory or visual. And you'd like to produce a single direction of current flow. So let's say just anode excitatory. You don't want to go, let's say, more than 2 milliamps, because that's what's conventionally done. So one potential solution, which I'm illustrating here, is called the 4X1 ring montage. And it's formed by putting a single electrode, which would be your active electrode or your electrode of interest, and surrounding it by return electrodes. So if your single electrode is the anode, the outer electrodes would be the cathode. If your single electrode on the inside is the cathode aimed at inhibition, then your outer electrodes would be the anode. And then you would set the ring radius of the four, how far the outer four are from the center one, by how much brain region you want to activate. And I'll be illustrating how that works. This is the idea anyways. And in this case, therefore, you'd only be using 5 electrodes placed variably on the head, using, for example, 1010 or 1020 EEG. You would not be using the remaining electrodes. There would only be 5 electrodes on the head. This is what the models predict can be achieved using the 4x1 montage of high-definition TDCS. So again, the center electrode determines polarity. So what you're looking are two pictures. In both cases, it's the 4x1. But on the left side, the center is the cathode, and on the right side, the center is the anode. And they look very different, very similar, except the difference is that the direction of current has been inverted. So you can see that in the left case, with the center cathode, you see a lot of blue, which represents current flowing out, or what's traditionally thought of as inhibitory current flow, and you don't see a lot of red. Well, in the other case, when you look at the center anode, you see a lot of red, which represents current flowing in, and you don't see a lot of blue. There certainly is a little bit of blue and a little bit of red, but you might think of the one on the left as a dominantly cathode inhibitory montage, while the right on the right is a dominantly excitatory montage. And I can certainly talk more if there are questions about how that unidirectionality is achieved. So you control your polarity at the center electrode, and the only other thing you control is how big you make the ring. And you can see that the current flow is largely restricted by the area of the cortex that is circumscribed by the ring. So you can sort of project that ring down to the cortex, and that's really where the current is flowing in. And if you think about it, that makes a lot of sense. The current's going to be, let's say, pushed in at the anode and collected by the ring. It's not going to flow to the other side of the head. This is one of and I think the most important study done using this particular high definition montage, this 4x1 montage. And I don't want to talk about Dr. Nietzsche and Dr. Paulson's work while they're in the room, since they obviously know a lot better than me. But what I thought was very striking about this was a couple things. One was that the durability of the effects, where only 10 minutes of stimulation led to effects that outlasted 2 hours. And the other thing that was very interesting to me was the difference in time course between the effects. So you can see that in the case of conventional nodal stimulation, which Dr. Nietzsche just talked about, you have maximal effects immediately post-stimulation, and then they decay. Well, with the 4x1 ring and nodal, which is the red situation, where you're delivering current more vocally to the motor cortex, the progression seems very different. And again, it's very interesting to speculate as to why, but one take, and by the way, the effect sizes were also larger, but one take home message is that when you go more focal, the characteristics, the nature of the outcomes as far as brain excitability changes may be very different. This is another experiment using the 4x1 montage. In this case, instead of using TDCS, TDS was applied. So instead of 1 milliamp, 1,000 milliamp were applied for a very short period of time. And what this does is it produces enough electric field in the brain to trigger a motor evoked potential. It's also very painful, so it's not often done. Now, as you see on the model side, we're now looking at three different 4x1 montages. They're very similar, except that the ring is being shifted around. So in the middle case, the center electrode is over the motor cortex, and as a result, we predict that current will be delivered selectively to the motor strip and the region surrounding it. If you move that ring either anterior or posterior, you will still get the same peak amount of current into the brain, but it'll be in a different part of the brain. So the model would predict that only the center row would produce a motor evoked response. And indeed, that is what we found experimentally when you applied, in this case, 1,000 amps through the center montage. You could get a nice motor evoked potential, a nice finger twitch, while if you displaced the ring either anterior or posterior, that twitch went away, and we were simultaneously tracking this with TMS. And with at least the resolution of this experiment, we could not distinguish the focality of the two techniques. We looked at a finer spacing than what I've illustrated here. Something else very striking, for me anyways, emerged from this study, which is we were using multiple subjects. The subject at the A1 is actually me, and then there were two other subjects that were used. And all three subjects, we did MRI-specific modeling, and all four subjects were exposed to transcranial electrical stimulation. What we found experimentally is that people were, had very different susceptibility to stimulation. So on the left column, what you're seeing is each subject received the minimum amount of stimulation that they need to get a threshold MEP. Now in my case, I can say that you know I have a very big head, and apparently took 1,000 volts to trigger that MEP. But if you looked at the other two subjects, they needed significantly less voltage, in fact, half as much as I needed, to trigger a comparable MEP. Another way to do this experiment is to give everyone the same dose. So if you gave me 600 volts, you could not trigger an MEP, while you could trigger a nice healthy MEP from the other subjects. Now these experimental findings tracked the modeling predictions very well. So dose is what you control on the outside, but what shows up on the inside is dependent on the body. And when you have, for example, a very large head like I do, for the same amount of current put on the outside, less reaches the brain. More of it, for example, would be shunted between the electrodes and not passed through the skull. And this may have interesting implications as far as, again, dose guidelines and dose optimization subjects. So the first question I asked was, if you have a brain region, where should you put the electrodes in order to target current to that brain region? But a secondary question would be, well, should everyone get the same, right? Or, as with other approaches, certainly with TMS, should there be some sort of titration done in order to be able to normalize it to the subjects because the heads are so different? And we've gone on further to explore this in different cases. This was looking at body mass index, ranging from borderline anorexic subjects to what are called super obese subjects who have very different amounts of fat in their head. And we were looking to see how that fat would affect current delivery, whether these super obese subjects who are part of TDCS craving studies should receive different amounts of current. And one of the things that came out of the studies, we found out that yes, fat is an issue, but there are huge differences in skull shape, in brain morphology, even where different anatomical regions are by as much as a couple of centimeters across individuals. So the bottom line is all our heads are not just spheres of increasing or small in size. They have incredibly different shapes. So even when you're using something like the EEG 1010 system or the 1020 system, the distances between electrodes, their relative position may vary significantly, again, warranting this notion that maybe not everyone should get the same thing. And these are just just with limited time, this is just sort of a bullet list of areas of ongoing investigation as far as individual dose titration for TDCS. TDCS is used at really the extreme of age, going from memory to pediatric epilepsy. And so the question is, should a four-year-old child receive 2 milliamp the way I would receive 2 milliamp, or should those guidelines be altered or considered differently? I'll show you an example in stroke if I have the time. Certainly you would think that in the case of a head injury or a skull defect where you have a hole in the skull, should that individual, maybe they shouldn't be counterindicated for TDCS, but maybe they should receive altered dose because their head is so different. And again, we have developed models to address this question. I touched on obesity. But I do want to emphasize this is not necessarily a non-issue, even across studies using healthy adults, where you could have a two-fold change in the electric field delivered in the brain across different people in this room, perhaps more so. And Dr. Nietzsche just illustrated how doubling the current on the outside can categorically change the nature of the outcome, right? And so with that level of change is not insignificant. How am I on time? 5 minutes. Oh, so I wanted to show one more example of dose customization that also compares conventional TDCS with high-definition TDCS. This was a subject at the University of South Carolina that was part of a study using TDCS for rehabilitation, and they had stroke, and you can see that stroke, you can see that blowout, that rather large bit of brain that is missing. And so this subject lost some speaking ability, and they were part of a TDCS study combining TDCS and rehab to see if some function could be restored. Now the target was, let's see if this mouse is working. Yeah, that target was right there. So that target was identified through functional magnetic resonance imaging, and these investigators decided that that was the target that they were interested in, this particular gyri right here. And so as a result, they put the electrode, which in this case was the anode, where my arrow is now, over the region. And the return, I believe, was put extracephalically. Now when we actually simulated this, what we found is that very little of the stimulation was reaching that gyri. And the reason why is the part of the brain that had been destroyed by the stroke was subsequently cannibalized and replaced with CSF, as happens with strokes. And CSF is superconductive. It's like a highway for current. And so some old current that was arriving in that region was actually shunting around the gyri, and very little of it was reaching this particular target. Now we then ran optimization, looking at high definition on the subject, and this montage was proposed, which is a 4x2 montage. This has two anodes surrounded by four cathodes. And you can see in the picture the resulting predicted current flow. So the point, there's now a prospective clinical trial running where subjects receiving sort of ad hoc TDCS montage placement are in a crossover, also receiving individually optimized stimulation. But the point is that in this case, it wasn't just about getting intensity, you know, getting current to that target. Without proper optimization, under some conditions, you could miss your target altogether. And so in this case, it wasn't simply about the peak current actually into the brain is the same in both cases. But in the former case, using an ad hoc approach without optimization, you were not getting the target at all. Now, as it turns out, that patient was a high responder, so who knows, right? Maybe that wasn't the target after all. But this example is used to try to illustrate the importance of leveraging computational models, which are available in dose design and stroke. So to conclude, in general, in TDCS, you are controlling dose. And you can do this using conventional, and by far, you know, very much more popular TDCS montages using larger pads, usually limited to just two pads, but sometimes three are used. But using those pads, you're limited to how many you can place on the head and how close you can place them together. So you can also explore high-definition electrodes, which are essentially just small TDCS electrodes. But at this point, you have the ability to use more electrodes to place them closer together and to energize them, to apply current to them in very precise ways, depending on your goals. Now, it is not trivial to determine the montage based on your target, but there are a lot of computational tools now available that allow you to do that, that allow you to put in the imaginary model space electrodes on the head and look to see where the current is flowing, or pick the target and have the computer suggest to you where it thinks you should put the electrodes. And certainly you can consider, as long as you have your subject's MRIs, individual optimization. It's not clear whether it's always necessarily needed, but there seems to be indications of situations where it's warranted. So this is it. I don't expect you to read this whole slide, but that is the website where I did post a talk with links to all the complete papers in case you were interested to follow up. So thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, great lecture. Any questions?
I have a question. One thing I didn't understand, which might be this is critical, was when you investigate the transcranial electric stimulation. Because it's well known that it's dependent on orientation and orientation orientation density also. And so if you have a center and for around electrodes, you think you look at the direction of the anode-cathode relationship?
Yeah, and so I didn't show that in the slide, but yeah, the models are there. So when we did those experiments, it's believed that anode has a lower threshold than cathode because it's excitatory. So those experiments are done dominantly with anode. And so there'd be anode in the center. And the current flow that I was showing was largely inward, so largely excitatory. We did some experiments, we reversed the polarity, just pilot experiments, and the threshold did go up.
Is it perpendicular and orthogonal to the center surface as well? The PA and LM, TMS.
Right, so the, you obviously have the so it's a great point, it's a, you know, it's a subtle one, but the gyri's are obviously folding, and so the part that you're interested in may not actually be pointed in the direction you're interested in. But you also have the sheet of CSF. So the CSF is guiding the current through. And so if you look at detail at some of these directionality plots, I'll jump to one quickly, you can see it's a little bit subtle. You can see that, for example, there are hot spots, it's not rather even. And so the overall flow pattern is this complicated relationship between the CSF conductivity and the brain conductivity and underlying structures. And so in this case, we are predicting that you get a dominantly, let's say, inward current flow under the anode, but you could have, if you look closely, you can even see like little outward hot spots. And yeah, so it is something to look at, yeah.
If I may ask a more general question, this effort of localizing the effect is a great thing to do, but in recent years, there has been the thought, in fact, discussed for quite some time, whether the functions you're trying to locally manipulate may in fact not be a result of a network activity. So the question that I have is, what thoughts you have on this issue of, or how valuable is the localizing approach versus considering the whole network?
Yeah, there's no reason, focal is not necessarily better than not. And I think it depends on your application. For example, I think there's many people using TDCS in cognitive neuroscience. And often in those studies, there's a very strong hypothesis built into the experiment that the initial current is affecting one brain region. Obviously, that brain region, as Dr. Nietzsche showed, is connected to many others, and you're going to have a network effect. But there's a very strong hypothesis built into the abstract of that paper that said we deliver current to dorsal lateral prefrontal cortex, and the results are interpreted as a result of that, rather than we deliver cortex to half the brain. And also, when you're focal, you can then ask the question, can I then displace the electrode and have that effect go away or see a different effect? I think in the clinical arena, it becomes much more subtle, where especially at the end of the day, you're interested in an effect and benefit to the people, there's in fact much overwhelmingly more evidence using conventional TDCS. You know, it has a 10-year head start. Even in those situations, though, I think it's a very good question, and I don't have the answer to it.
We can actually discuss it during the coffee break, but there may be another question between now and the coffee break. Yes?
I have a question regarding TACS. So would your models for pool also for TACS, or would they include
them? Oh, that's a good question. I'm sorry I didn't mention that. Yes, so all the pictures I've shown you here, if you wanted to write TACS, things largely do not change. We've modeled from DC 0 hertz all the way up to 1 kilohertz, and the tissue properties are largely resistive, or they change in such a ratio that these pictures largely do not change. But certainly for a lot of TACS, which is done, you know, in the 10 hertz, 40 hertz range, it would be essentially identical to what I'm showing you here, with the caveat that, you know, inward, outward would now be, you'd be essentially flipping between